everybody. Carrie Schaefer here today with another episode of Tell Me Your Secrets. And I am absolutely delighted to have a fabulous thriller writer with us today. This woman has been so much fun to exchange emails with. I know we're going to have a great conversation today. We also have just been talking backstage before you all got here, and we were having a great old time. And then I had to keep saying, hey, wait, we're going to talk about that later because it will be more fun to talk about it when all the people are here. So I am going to totally probably mess up her name, but I'm going to give it a try. And I am delighted and happy to introduce to you today, Adako Offenord.
Close.
Offenord,
I'm sorry.
Offenord, right? Adako.
So good. Okay.
Adako.
Sort of like Dakota, but no T.
Yeah, I had it in my head. I'm sorry. Yeah. I practiced even before we came on, and I still did it wrong.
Right. As in off and on, you have to think of off and on.
There we go.
It's, I think, Danish or Dutch or something like that. It means from the north.
I figured it came from the north. I have Norwegian heritage, so, you know,
Yeah,
see, there we go. My mother's side of the family were Gustavsons, and my grandpa came over on a boat when he was, you know, eight, and...
Yeah,
there's all kinds of stories there. So I apologize for the mispronunciation. But
No, you're in the club.
I'm sure. I imagine I am. For those of you who are listening in on the podcast version and can't see our names here, her name is spelled Adako, D-A-C-O, last name Offenord. I got it, right?
Got it.
Offenorde is how we pronounce that. The other thing I do want to mention, we always seem to have a tech difficulty, and I apologize for that. Today we have a squealing computer just for, it's an exercise, actually, we did it on purpose to test your concentration and your tolerance levels. It's kind of a little bonus sound that you can just, you know, get used to.
It's like the avalanche in the background. It's the forewarning, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, avalanche forewarning, because there is an avalanche in the book, I'm pretty sure. So before we get to the book, which we're going to do here very shortly, I do want to talk a little bit about Adako's name got me going because it's very fascinating. She has other books, and I actually looked for them, but I didn't find them because they're not under Adako Offenord. It's just Adako, right?
Adako, that's right.
Adako, D-A-C-O. So let's talk about those books real quick. Not real long, but just for a minute. So the first book you wrote was kind of a suspense.
That's right. It was romantic suspense.
Romantic suspense.
Called The Libra Affair.
The Libra Affair. Okay.
And, it featured a female lead, and her sidekick was a nerdy scientist. So he was your beta type male, and she was your alpha female.
Well, so how is that different from the current book, which you also have a strong lead female, I believe. Is her sidekick in this one not necessarily beta, I'm thinking, however?
No, I wouldn't say that. And it is definitely not a romance. It is straight up thriller.
It's a psychological thriller. And well, let's talk about the book. It's called Cover Your Tracks.
That's it.
And let's see that pretty cover. There you go. Beautiful. And there's the snow. And
if you could.
Oops. It's always hard to get it right.
There's the two people.
Oh, right. Yeah. So tell us the premise of this book.
Okay. So it's about a woman who is 8.5 months pregnant, who's traveling home by train to visit with her estranged family. And the weather is supposed to be good. It's a holiday season. The weather turns very hazardous and a blizzard hits. They're high in the Rocky Mountains, and then it's a remote area, and then all of a sudden, boom, an avalanche hits. And so there's an ex-Army Ranger on the train, and he says, we need to get them back to train. It's the only safe place. So she's the only one that will listen because the conductor is telling everybody to sit down, put your seatbelt on, everything's going to be fine. So she makes a decision to go with him, and luckily she does, because they're the only two that survive when the avalanche strikes.
So right there, we have like a really suspenseful story all by itself, because she's pregnant in avalanche in the middle of the winter, and then I'm guessing that there's maybe a little more.
Yeah. Isn't there always? So, yeah. So these two people, they're suddenly, you know, without heat and food, and they have nothing but the coat and the clothing that they're wearing, and they have to figure out how to survive. So the good thing is that he knew how to separate the last car of the train, which turned out to be a private passenger car that was being transported, and that happens apparently more frequently than we know. And so they got on that. He unhooked them, and the avalanche hit the train, threw it in a gulch 150 feet deep. They were gone, unfortunately. The two of them survived, but again, the private passenger car has no heat or water or anything. And so then they have to then they eventually have to run from that, and then face all the survival type issues. Like,
right. Why is it called cover your tracks?
Well, you know, because I think that, you know, they each brought their own baggage to the story, their backstories, as it's called, and they each have secrets.
Right. Okay.
And, what happens in the story, you know, there's lots of cover up. There's lots
of. Which, of course, we're not going to talk about here, because we're not doing spoilers.
Yeah. But they both had very, very troubled backgrounds and hard family lives.
Right.
So when you put two people that, you know, have troubled paths together, and you put them in a dire situation, it just brings out the worst and the best.
Right.
And so, you know, yeah.
Well, see, this sounds very much like, you know, Stephen King's advice. You put your characters up a tree and throw rocks at them, but that was not enough for you. You put them in the middle of a blizzard with an avalanche and pregnant and, yeah. And then threw the rocks.
That's it. Yeah.
So I would love it if you would read about the first page of that book for us to give us a little introduction to how it's all set. Okay. I was also fascinated by the word Spokane. So they're on their way to Spokane and actually live near Spokane. So that just kind of perked up my little ears. And
fabulous. Well, I just, you know, asked to Spokane and why. I got on the Amtrak schedule and started looking to see where trains went. And that I would take her from Chicago to Spokane with her family.
Sure.
So that's a connection with that. But, and that's how they ended up in the mountains, the remote mountains and the snow and the avalanche and all that stuff. But anyway, Lee Child was so gracious. He wrote my book, and
All right. Now that you mentioned that, we have to talk about that, because I was going to ask you about that later, but now we'll do it before we read. So okay. I have to know, like, Lee Child is like my superhero of thrillers.
Right.
I mean, you know, I just love his books. So how does one, you know, get a blurb from the wonderful, fabulous, fantastic hero Lee Child?
I know. Well, I asked him.
And there we have it.
So gracious and so kind. And he read the book and he loved it. And so he wrote a blurb.
That's just so awesome.
So delighted, you know.
Yeah, but you have guts. I just have to say this. It takes nerve to do that. Like, for those of us who are authors, we know asking for blurbs is one of the hardest things to do. We just, you know, and often we cringe from asking even people we know well to do a blurb. So kudos to you to, you know, have the nerve to just say, hey, I'm asking Lee Child. Good job.
Well, you know, you think about it, and they're people, just like we are, And we all kind of, you know, are in the same boat. Some people are a little bit higher up in the cabins and luxury cabins. The other ones, like us, we're like down in the, throwing coal in the furnace to keep the boat company. But, you know, and I thought, who would be the best, most awesome person around that I would just be so thrilled and love? And, of course, Lee Chop. And
yeah.
I asked, and I was so delighted, I have to say, just so delighted that he enjoyed the book.
Yeah, that has to override. We also talked about when we were backstage, we talked about bad reviews. And I'm just saying, you know, that's got to override. On any day where you get one of those really, really crappy reviews, you just got to look at what you got from Lee Child. So that said, now we're going to let you go ahead and read to us.
So he writes, let me just write.
Yeah, read his blurb, absolutely.
Sensational. New, fresh, suspenseful. I loved this book, Lee Child.
Woohoo! See, I just want to give you a high five here.
I know. That just really makes it all worthwhile. Okay, so cover your tracks. Chapter one. A violent gust of wind rocked the passenger train as it rolled down the tracks inside Glacier National Park. The car yanked and pulled from one side of the track to the other, zigzagging like pinballs traveling through the narrow chute. Without any apparent reason, the brakes on the train squealed, and 23 cars and a powerful engine kangarooed into a hard deceleration. Margot Fletcher, who was seated towards the rear of the train inside a viewing car, tightened her seatbelt and grasped the arms of her seat. At 8.5 months pregnant, she couldn't afford a fall. Her heart rate shot into overdrive, and her baby shifted as if turning a complete somersault. Her stomach clenched as if she were experiencing a contraction. Unable to mask the pain and the worry, she groaned and hoped the baby hadn't turned breech, prayed that she wasn't going into labor. A sandy-haired man sitting a few seats away stood up, holding on to a seat back with only one hand for support. He was built like a pro linebacker, strong enough to keep himself upright. Are you okay? He asked her. The baby. She nodded and looked out the window. It would be dark soon. The higher elevations of the Rocky Mountains had been visible only a few minutes ago, but were now obscured by a translucent veil of snow. Before she'd gotten on the train, the weather report had predicted light snow, not a blizzard. So that's the first page.
Yeah, so, and we're all set up for all kinds of fun things to follow.
You know something bad's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, see, it's fabulous. It's the perfect setup and so much fun. Because, you know, I love survival stories.
Right, and they're a lot of fun to write. You know, they're not just sit down and write it, because you have to figure out, you have to do a little research and figure out, how do you survive in the snow?
Yeah.
How do you survive if you get buried in an avalanche? What do you do?
Right.
And, you know, in researching it, I came across this fabulous article, well, several of them, lots of stories about what happened in 1910 in Washington at Stevens Pass. And there was a massive avalanche. And a train was traveling through at that area, which was extremely dangerous. And multiple small avalanches came down, blocked the tracks, and the passenger train had to stop. So they had to sit there a couple days. And in the meantime, they were waiting for the tracks to get cleared, but they weren't cleared in time. And one morning around 4 a.m, a massive avalanche just rolled down the mountain and struck the train, and all this
thing happened.
They went down the hill and they all mostly died. But a few were able to get out, and one guy got out by swimming against the avalanche. So he must have already been outside the train.
Uh-huh.
But that was a real eye-opener, you know, reading about that disaster. And it's actually considered one of America's deadliest train wrecks and disasters, and they call it the White Death, because, you know, so many people died at the hands of the Appalachian nature, right. So forth. But yeah, there's a lot that goes into just writing a survival thriller, like where to walk and where not to walk, and don't walk through places where there's streams because you might fall through into water underneath ice. You might drink.
Well, sure.
Or you might walk into a big well that's been filled with snow and find yourself 30 feet down. I mean, when you're in the mountains and hills go up and down like that, there's just, you know.
Right. And it's hard to tell what's underneath the snow when it's that deep. So it's, even the trees are pretty much buried.
And you get disoriented with the white, all the white stuff. Right. You can't figure out up and down and which way you're going. So, but that was very interesting. I enjoyed looking at all the different articles I could find on surviving winter and all.
So, out of curiosity now, shifting gears a little bit, what kind of things do you do when you're not researching surviving terrible blizzards and avalanches and things? So, you know, what do you do on a fun night out?
Fun night out? There's no such thing anymore.
Okay. In the past, we're talking about the past and the probable future, because someday we will.
Okay. So it's interesting. My husband lives in LA. I live in Huntsville, Alabama. So we travel back and forth.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of travel.
It is. So when I go to LA, obviously there's so much more to do there. There's restaurants, there's museums. And one of our favorite things to do is to go to museums. And it's funny, we have so much in common, but one of the things that we really love are contemporary art museums, because they're just so bold and different and creative, and we just love it. And so we'll go to the museum and hang out there. And I tend to get very involved with exhibits, and I might even begin to break out dancing and singing with you.
And
he might even be known to take some pictures of me acting silly. So, but we have a really good time, and the same thing can happen in the grocery store, actually.
Well, you know, in the grocery store. So it just sounds like you have much more fun than most of us do in museums, where we feel that we have to be all serious and proper. So I
love it. If it gets escorted out the door. The guards are chasing me around, literally. I've had guards come after us in the grocery store, you know, wondering who's this crazy lady singing and dancing. But no, I mean, we're so happy to see each other, and it's like a vacation.
Right.
We get together. So it's so much fun.
Well, this is great. I love these stories. Now, and another little interesting piece, like I said, Deco is a very fascinating person. She's not your usual average boring middle of the road person at all, because she is the person who's singing and dancing in the museum and getting chased around by the guards. She also actually has a license to practice law, and has done so. So
for many years.
Yeah.
But what I've done is I sold my shares in my partnership. So right now I'm primarily focusing on writing. And I've got quite a few works, and I've got one that is sitting on a couple editors' desks, and we're trying to look and see what's going to happen with that.
Can you talk about that at all? Can you tell us what it is that you're shopping, or is that a big secret right now? You can just give us a clue. Is it another thriller?
It is, because I gravitate towards thrillers. You know, really kind of my jam.
Sure.
They like to say. And this one is about a woman who gets thrown out of a hotel room window.
Was she singing it? Oh, no. Sorry. She got thrown out of a hotel for singing and dancing. But no. Okay. She got thrown out of a hotel window. Okay.
She was thrown out of a window. She lands on an awning. She doesn't have any injuries. And actually, that can happen. And I had to look up and see what height she could survive without injury coming down. And it's about four stories. Anyway, she gets thrown out of the window, and she wakes up with psychogenic amnesia. So she doesn't know who she is. And psychogenic amnesia is a type of amnesia that you don't have brain damage, but it's where you block your memories. And it's a form of self-protection.
Sure.
So she has to figure out who she is. And the only thing she knows about herself is her name, which is Blue. And she doesn't know where she lives. She doesn't know if she's married. And somebody's trying to kill her. So she has to figure it all out, put it all together before they kill her and her mother, so they say. So it's an interesting story that hops around the east, up around New York and to Toronto,
right,
that area.
Right. And you can hear the, you know, there's a ticking clock in there. There's a timeline. Somebody's trying to kill her. She's got to figure out who she is. That's, I love books like that. That's awesome. We have a comment we have to look at here. Michelle says, I've got to share a museum moment. While visiting the Holocaust Museum, my daughter's friend and I got into a fit of giggles. Somebody's cell phone set us off, but we couldn't stop. It was so embarrassing. I think we just needed a release as it was so horrific.
Yeah, I get that. I totally get that. I do too.
I'm the kind of, I started laughing at a funeral once. It was a terrible funeral too. It was really sad. It was like, we were young and it was someone our age who had died when I was a teenager. And, but my leg went to sleep and I went to stand up and I just about fell over and I started laughing. My boyfriend at the time tried to, you know, then kill me because he was embarrassed, but you know, it happens.
Yeah, the emotion comes out in different ways.
Sure, absolutely.
But, you know, one time I have a story like that. When my son was two, just maybe 18 months or two, his sister-in-law taught him the GD word. And so we're in Walmart, or no, Target, and he's in the little buggy, and I'm pushing him, and he starts saying that word over and over and over again. In front of us is a woman with her little girls in their Catholic school uniforms. And I couldn't stop laughing either. And I couldn't hush him up. And he was laughing. He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. So.
Well, because you were laughing. Then that's
what I'm laughing. What? But anyway, yeah, I think we all go through that. And
oh, we do.
We all have our moments.
And but that's what makes us, that's what makes us human. So you did also mention something about karaoke.
Yeah. Well, and I paint. I like to do watercolor painting.
Oh, and painting. Well, okay. Well, we can go there first.
But a karaoke. Okay, so I like to have a glass of wine and listen to the music. And I told my husband, I said, I've got to have a karaoke machine. I've got to have one. So he recently got me one. And he hasn't seen it until this trip. He just got here. He hasn't been here for 8 months, so I haven't seen it for 8 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the first thing I do is pick up this karaoke machine, right? Put it on, start singing. He's like, I want to do that. Oh, that's fun. But I'm like, no. No, but actually, there were two microphones. So.
Oh, well, there you go. What a fun thing. So, okay. Well, now that I dragged you down that path, let's go back and talk about the watercolors. So you like to paint.
I do. Well, I've always, my whole life, done a couple artsy things. One is I like to write. Of course, when I was young, it was this like angsty poetry junk. And then when I was older, I was more serious. And same with painting. So I just started off painting watercolors. My mother liked to paint. She painted with oil and painted with watercolor. She never just did it that serious. It was just for fun. So I kind of picked up paintbrushes, paint, and started, and just, you know, have dabbled here and there, and did a little in law school, and then I just put it away and didn't paint for years and years, because I was too busy singing.
Uh-oh. I hope you guys can still hear me. Deco seems to have frozen on her end, so I'm gonna hope that everything comes back together and she comes back. If not, I'm just going to keep
karaoke. There we are.
Back. There you are. We lost you for a bit. So,
okay. So,
you're freezing and glitching.
Uh oh. Is my.
Yeah, I think it's your internet this time. Usually mine.
No.
But
can you hear me?
Kind of.
Are you there?
You're frozen, but I can kind of hear you. I think what we're going to do, because the internet has decided to, you know, tell us that it's time to be done is I'm going to repeat a few things for you. So our guest today is Daco Offenhauser. She's not here to correct me if I get it wrong. I call her anything, but I won't. Daco Offenhauser. And her book is Cover Your Tracks. She does have some other books out there just under Daco that you can look for. We made a joke before the show, or we're talking about she was going to like be Cher or something like that with the one name program, but it doesn't really fit with the thrillers. So now we have the whole name. If you're trying to find her, she is on Facebook. She has a website, and it's easy to find her because she has an unusual name. So again, if you're listening on the audio version, it's Daco, D-A-C-O, last name Offenhauser, A-U-F-F-E-N-O-R-D-E. You do want to read this book. It's brilliant, and you're really going to enjoy it. And hey, Lee Child says it's awesome. I think you're back with us for a minute. Oh, hi. Look at you.
How's it going? Mishka.
Yeah, I missed you too. We're gonna go ahead and say goodbye though, since we're getting unwieldy here. Anything else that you want us to know before we go, in case?
Stay tuned.
Oh yeah, because there's gonna be another book coming down the road. So go find her, find the book, and tune in again next week when I have an awesome guest. We're going to talk about a new book called 1,000 Ships, which is a women's retelling of the myths of the storming of Troy, which I think you guys are really going to love. So in the meantime, go read a good book and come back and see me again, same time, same place next week. Thanks again, Daco.
Daco.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, bye.